Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack. Thank you for listening. Today, I am joined once again by author Cadwell Turnbull. You probably remember that Cadwell was here for episode 41 for the lesson, and he is back with us some 30 episodes later to talk about his terrific September 2021 release, No Gods, No Monsters. Cadwell, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners of Merrick Library's Top Shelf. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on.
Congratulations on No Gods, No Monsters. So the book has taken the world by storm, and rightly so. You've been in the New York Times, NPR. The book is an Indie Next pick. The book has a starred review from Publishers Weekly, and you were part of Lit Hub's incredible horror roundtable. What an interview. What a group of authors that was. To read that was just really something. I'll put the link in for the podcast page because that was really something else for all us horror fans. And then Rebecca Roanhorse, who is a New York Times bestselling author. She's a Hugo winning author. She had this to say, No Gods, No Monsters is profound and unsettling in the best way. It's sharp, insightful social commentary wrapped up in a tale of the uncanny. And then, of course,
so wild.
I mean, unbelievable. I mean, of course, it's believable. But and then you make the all important and prestigious Library Reads top 10 books for September 2021. You got a nice review there from, some librarian gave you a great review. I don't know who that was.
Who it was.
But she really had some wonderful things to say.
And I appreciate her very much.
And all mutual. What do you make of all of this?
Like, I don't know. So, you know, when the lesson was coming out, I had very modest expectations, and everything that happened blew my head open. And I felt the same way about this one because it's a weird book, you know? So I was doing a lot in it, and I definitely was taking a risk. And it was something that I thought, well, since the lesson was well received, this might be the only chance I get. Who knows what's going to happen later on, right? And so I was like, let me take this risk and do the book that I want to do, the series that I wanted to do. And I was real nervous about it. So I'm most of the time relieved, you know, that people read it and they didn't just like throw it across the room. And I'm just excited. It's been exciting.
So for listeners who are new to our guest, I wanted to say that The Verge says that Turnbull is a rising star in the science fiction and fantasy world. And I just said earlier off mic that I think his star has risen so high, you need a telescope to see his star because it's up there. And all of that is true. If you're not familiar, Cadwell Turnbull is the author of The Lesson, which is a science fiction novel of first contact, which I still think about. And I will still go back and read certain passages from that book because it had such an impact on me. His short fiction has appeared in The Verge, as we just said, Lightspeed, Nightmare, Asimov Science Fiction, and several anthologies. He's in the Best American Science Fiction and Fantasy 2018 and the year's Best Science Fiction and Fantasy for 2019. His novel, The Lesson, which I keep saying, was winner of the 2020 Newcomb Institute Literary Award in the debut category. So readers, listeners, you are in very good hands with today's guest. So now we flash forward to today. You've given us the gift of No Gods, No Monsters. Tell us about the book and the inspiration.
You know, the short pitch for it is that it's a retelling of the civil rights movement, but in the modern day with monsters from Caribbean and popular folklore. So werewolves and sukuyans, vampires and witches advocating for their human rights. But it's also a story very much like The Lesson about how the community and society responds to this new presence. So with The Lesson, it's aliens arrive and it's how society responds to the presence of aliens. This one is society finding out that monsters are real and how people respond to that. And it follows a series of characters, lots of characters, as they try to navigate this new world, being a part of the monster world or discovering this part of the world that they didn't know existed.
No Gods, No Monsters is the first book in this Convergence trilogy. And I am here for all three, but I have to ask, Cadwell, why would you do this to yourself? What was your pitch like? How do you pitch that to the editor? where does this come from that it's going to be a trilogy?
So I think it was during the ramp up to the lesson, I was thinking about what I was going to do next. And I thought urban fantasy might be a good idea. I'd been reading a lot of urban fantasy and I was excited about playing in the genre. I had written some horror urban fantasy short fiction. And so it's like, let me try a book. And as I started mapping out what the book would look like, it just became pretty clear. You know, I kept adding things to it. So I was like, I want to do this. And then I was like, well, I also want to do this. And I think that it would make sense. And then other things started coming to it that would make sense. And then because the ambition for the project kept growing, I knew, well, I can't fit all of that in one book. It would have to be three books. And the way that I envision it is it's sort of one long book, but setting up in three parts and time space between each. So like a few years between each book. And so I pitched it that way. I was like, this is a novel, a series about monsters coming out into the world and how society responds, but there's all of this other political stuff going on and all of this cosmic stuff going on. You know, the gods are up to some things as well. Luckily, Blackstone thought that made sense.
We love Blackstone. We just
right. They were like, okay, do it. And when I turned in the book, pitches are different than books. So when I pitched it, I talked about all the stuff that would be in it, but then I also kind of left some things for me to kind of like unfurl on my own, like to work out. And when I submitted it, I could tell initially there was like a what response, but luckily Blackstone again, just they rolled with it. They were like, this is very interesting. And so I'm just grateful for that. And since then, we've been talking about the second book and the third book. And, you know, we talked about what the name of the trilogy should be. Originally, it was No Gods, No Monsters, No Gods, No Monsters, book one. But we decided that Convergence was a good idea to bring in the Convergence saga because what's happening in the book and the series is that a lot of different forces, people, monsters, and gods are converging over a period of time. We wanted to set readers up for that expectation.
So when you pitch this, do you do it over Zoom? Do you do it on a telephone call? And when you did it, like if you did it over Zoom, did someone just say, we can't hear you?
No, I sent them, you know, a very long Word document pitch,
okay.
You know, summarizing what each book was doing and then breaking it down like, with each faction within each book. I went back and looked at it recently and some things have changed a little bit, but still relatively the same. And it looked insane when I looked at it. So I have no idea why they said cool, but they did.
Hooray, Blackstone. Amazing. So in the book, you've got, first of all, your prose is gorgeous. As we've talked about this before, I've talked to anyone who will listen how much I love the way you write. You use this contemporary fantasy as a lens to examine this real world oppression and injustice. I love what you're doing in this book. You know, you've got these LGBTQ issues. You've got multiracial characters, fake news, civil unrest, secret societies. And although in today's world, they're not so secret anymore, are they? And somehow you bring all of these characters together and the connections start coming for the reader towards the end. And I kept thinking when you were writing this, did you have like that, I don't know if you've ever seen that show Homeland, where Carrie has the big board with the strings connecting all the, and I'm thinking you need to take a photo of that so I can see what that looks like. I don't know how you keep track of it.
No, I didn't. I did not have that. Sometimes I think it would be helpful for me to do that. What I do, I think my brain works this way naturally, which is a weird thing to say. I jump around, I make connections, weird connections all over the place. And so a lot of it is just kind of like making those kind of intuitive connections and then remembering that I've made those connections. So like, you know, keeping an outline that's changing as I go. And it's just a very simple outline. It's not elaborate. It's not three-dimensional. It's basically laying out everything that's happening and how they connect to each other. And then rereading and rereading and rereading. And reading different parts of the book at the same time. So like as I'm revising, sometimes I'll revise or rework things in layers. I'll be in the middle of the book and then start revising the beginning of the book again. and then going back through. And so in that way, I'll be able to make connections. Well, what's happening later and how can I see it in the beginning and trying to remember all of that stuff. But then, as you might expect, I miss things too. There's things that I think are a certain way. And then I realize, oh, that was an earlier iteration of that thing. It's changed quite a bit. And then I have to just go back and work on it again and hopefully catch it before it goes to the printers, you know, that sort of thing.
I think it's wonderful that the characters sort of define for you in a way how they're going to get to a certain space that you want them to get to, but maybe it goes in a different direction. I'm loving hearing that.
Right. Definitely a discovery. And I'm working on the second book right now, and there's a character that I was not paying attention to at all. I was just like, this person is important for plot reasons. And now he's just been doing surprising things. I've just been kind of like, oh, you're interesting. There's more going on to you than I thought. That's always fun when it's like the characters confound the outline. They're like, well, I don't agree. And what they have in mind is better than I thought of. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to let you do that. And it's changed the book slightly, but I think it deepens the book quite a bit.
Tell me how you get to the title, No Gods, No Monsters.
I believe that came pretty early. A lot of things happening underneath the story is mutual aid work. So like the monsters are using solidarity economics to kind of support themselves and give themselves protection and doing, and then a lot of that is still left up for the next book and the book after that. There's some things that they're doing that the seeds are planted here, but you'll see them grow over the course of the trilogy. And so I knew that some of the characters would be a bit on the radical end. So there's some like radical monsters. And it seemed to me that old anarchist slogan, No Gods, No Masters, it just was a really interesting play on things that are happening in the book. Because even though there are monsters and gods in the book, there is also rebellion against people being below, monsters being beneath us that we have to look down at or subjugate, or that there are gods above us that we have to, you know, worship. And so it's both cueing people into what's in the book, but also some of the political underpinnings of the series.
And what makes a monster really, right? I mean, these monsters, they have a different appearance, but are they really monsters? You know, because the human form, humanity, can take on monstrous proportions.
Yeah, the flip side is definitely that despite what these people might call themselves, they're still people, and that their wants and desires are human desires, and that they should have a place within the world.
These characters that are in No Gods, No Monsters, Lena and Dragon and et cetera, where do they show up for you? I know the lesson, you wrote that a while back, but where do they start showing up? Did they get their infancy in a short story you were thinking about?
I have a bunch of different answers to this. So there's a character in the book called Sonia. She's a Sukuyan, and she can remove her skin. She's kind of like the Caribbean version of a vampire. And, you know, her ability is quite useful. So she's like become this kind of like interesting kind of creepy super spy. She's fantastic. I love every time she shows up. But she happens to be in reference to a short story that I wrote that was in the Best American 2018, Loneliness Is in Your Blood. She's the little girl in that story. And she's grown up, and there's references to the story in the book. Some of the other characters, so like Sandra's last name is in conversation with the lesson. So there's two sets of families that are in both books. So there's the Reeds and the Pages. And Sandra is a Reed. And, you know, one of her senator colleagues is a Page. And it's kind of hinting at, you know, these kind of like cosmic dance between two families kind of thing. There's a character in the book named Cal. He has an important role, but he's most of the time in the background, though that's going to change over the trilogy as well. Seeds planted in this book, and he has been around for several years. I've been writing from his perspective for a while. And so, you know, bringing him into the series made a sort of intuitive sense because there's a connection there that he has to another entity that shows up in the book that's really important. And that entity has a long history as well. I've been thinking about her for a while. She is so much I can't talk about with her because it would spoil things. Some of the gods I've been writing about some of those guys since before my MFA. Like I showed up, one of my first stories I submitted to the MFA had a couple of those gods in it. So Damsel is in the book, but she's someone that I've been thinking about for a while and that I'm quite excited about and that shows up in this book in this iteration. And yeah, there's a lot of that.
So many of your past characters are converging, if you will, into the Convergence saga, which is just like blowing my mind right now.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And then, you know, Lena is a new character. Ridley's a new character. Harry, you know, Karuna. There's a ton of characters that are new that I discovered as I was drafting. You know, it was one of those things where a lot of the characters are a diverse set of characters and a lot of them don't have my identity, you know? So I talk to people. I try to get a sense of how people feel about certain types of representation within fiction. So one of the characters is trans and ace. And so, you know, I talk to different people about that experience and how to do it responsibly, what they like or don't like in media. And so trying to do that justice, but also give those characters a well-roundedness in a way that I appreciate as a person, not it just being about one aspect of my identity, but many aspects of my identity and the things I care about and what I think about and what I love and that sort of thing.
So well done. Everything you just said in the book for future readers, it is all so well done.
Appreciate that.
On your website, which I love the website, you have a sort of guide to reading No Gods, No Monsters. I did not have that when Lauren Maturo of Blackstone sent me the galley. I dropped everything and I just went in cold, just like with the lesson, and my head exploded. Bloated when I finished No Gods, No Monsters. What made you decide to put that guide there?
I mean, well, you know, a lot of writers, I think that the response to when people don't get something is to be like, well, you just didn't get it. I'm doing something, you don't understand it, whatever. And I felt like that was a pretentious thing to do. You know, there's a lot of things that I'm playing with in the book. Mystery is a huge part of the book. A lot of the characters are in the dark. And the way that operates for the characters means that the reader is kind of in the dark for long periods of time and won't be out of the dark completely, or maybe not at all until like the end of the trilogy. It's a long road. And because I'm doing that, and because I have a lot of POVs, and because I'm moving around in time, and there's some cosmic weirdness happening, it's a lot to throw at a reader. And I recognize that. And because I've lived inside of it for a while now, I'm following my gut with a lot of the things that I'm doing. But some of those things may not always be easy for a reader coming into it. And so in my mind, I was like, well, some people have read it and just got it. And some people have read it, didn't get all of it, but loved it anyway. And then some people were just like, what? You know, there was a recent review I saw and it was something like, I like this a lot, or I love this a lot. Also what? Like that, you know, that response. And so I wrote that blog pretty much to give people an idea of, here's some things that will just help you in thinking and orienting yourself to the kind of book this is, because it's doing a lot of things, but it's also breaking a lot of rules. It's like third person, it's occasionally first person simultaneously. It's an incredible amount of POVs. It moves around in time quite a lot. The main through line of the story is people adjusting to this new world where there's a lot they don't know. Making that choice, I knew it would be frustrating to some readers who would think, oh, wouldn't the story be with the secret societies? Wouldn't you write the story from that perspective? It's more important to me to write the marginalized perspective. The people are in the dark, are not in the know, and what that feels like, because I have that experience, you know, in the world. I also wanted to cue people into that fact that it's something that is deliberate. There's reasons behind it, this thematic things that it's doing. And in order to get the best experience with the book, you kind of have to like allow the mystery to sit and allow the movements to happen and kind of intuitively pull yourself along just as the characters are trying to find their way through the dark. You kind of have to do that as well.
You know, I also listened to the audiobook, and Dion Graham narrates the audiobook, and whoa, does Blackstone know how to pick their narrators or what? He is excellent. He's just so good. When you heard it, or were you aware of Graham's work beforehand, or what was your experience like listening to it, if you have?
I was aware of his work beforehand. He did Black Leopard, Red Wolf. I read that. I think the first thing I listened to from him was a heartbreaking work of Staggering Genius. You know, I love audiobooks, so I get really excited when when they find an audiobook narrator, they suggest audiobook narrators. I'm always really excited to listen to it. It feels real when I'm listening to someone else read it too. He was just something else. He initially like messaged me and he was like, I'm going to be working on this. We had picked him and he was like, I'm going to have questions. I'll reach out to you at a certain point to ask you questions. And I expected it to be like maybe, a short conversation with, a few questions. He had many questions and they were great, great questions, like understanding things on multiple levels kinds of questions. You know what I mean? And I was just blown away by that, the level of dedication that he was bringing to the project. And then he would occasionally like tell me, okay, so this is what I'm thinking about for this character. They're sort of here. And then he would perform it. And I would be like, you nailed it. That is exactly what I'm thinking about. When he did Damsel, I was blown away. I was like, this is Damsel. This is exactly who she is. It was just a lot of fun. And so, of course, by the time the audiobook was finished, I had to listen to it. And we still talk occasionally. I would just call him up and be like, I really like this section and here's what I was thinking. And he's great.
It's great. And when I saw that he was chosen, I did a happy dance because of all of his work. And one of my favorite parts of the book, of course, I like those dark sections that make my blood run cold. And we know what I feel like with that scene in The Lesson. But to listen to him, Dion Graham, narrate the part of the book that was even more horrifying than reading it. But there's a scene where there's a very big meeting of the order that takes place. And man, I re-listened to it and went back and listened to it again. That scene is terrifying. Dragon makes an appearance in that. And I thought, oh, Cadwell, you did it again. What the heck is... My blood runs cold and then I got to go back and listen to it again. And he also does this thing where he just brings your prose. It's so lush. He just brings it to life. So, I asked you this about The Lesson. When you write a scene like that, okay, and I'm specifically thinking of that meeting scene. When you write that, do you kind of go to another place? What is that like for you to write that? Like, I loved it. So
that scene in particular came to me pretty early in the drafting process. So I remember exactly where I was when I was working on that scene. I occasionally, because I have difficulty staying in my apartment and writing, I get distracted easily. I'll go to the library. And I have like two libraries that I go to. Yay. I was living in Boston at the time. Well, I was living in Somerville near Boston. And so I would go to the Somerville Library and then I would take a longer walk and go to the Cambridge Library in Cambridge. And I remember at the time I was walking around with a notebook and a lot of the early part of the book, I was just writing by hand. And I just sat there for a whole afternoon and I was just writing out what the scene would look like and mapping it out and that sort of thing. And a lot of that stuff just comes to me, like, I keep using the word intuitively, I'll just get a sense feeling for where something should go and then I'll follow it. And then I'll revise the heck out of it to make sure that it's working on a craft level. But it's one of those things that when I was thinking about that scene, I was like, well, this needs to happen. And then this needs to happen. This is what it will look like. And this is what it will feel like. And it was a sunny day.
I can't believe that. I won't believe that.
And usually, I'll get close enough on the feeling level that I can go back and revise it so that it works relatively well. It's never completely satisfying, like nothing. I go back and read all the time and I'm like, oh, I would do this and this differently. But if it can, if it can seep up whatever the gut feeling that I'm trying to get from it, then I'm happy enough to let it sit and move on, And that one is one of those moments.
As a reader and as a fan, it worked.
Appreciate that.
I mean, it really worked. And I thought, okay, so T's two for two. First, the lesson. lesson he did it in, and now he's doing it here. Oh my gosh. And the other thing I wanted to ask you is there was, I think it was on Instagram, they launched it. There's a playlist for the book, for No Gods, No Monsters. And boy, is it great. And it's so much fun to listen to. I've listened to it twice. How much fun was putting that together?
Oh my gosh, I appreciate so much that you listened to it.
Of course. I mean, it's kind of like, I feel like this book just comes with an instruction manual, and I just, it enhances the experience for me. So hopefully readers will do the same.
Yeah, it was fun. So when they first reached out to me, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to put on this playlist. And then, you know, within minutes, songs start popping up. You know, there was songs I was listening to as I was writing it. And so some of that is on the playlist, but then there's also songs that are hinting or playing with aspects of the book. And I set up the playlist to be in chronological order to the book. You know, it shifts as the book shifts to different concerns. Some of the songs on the playlist are also songs that make appearances in the book. They are referenced in the book. And it was a blast to do. I love scores. So I was able to push a little bit of the scores in there and get some of those in there. And also just finding dark songs that match the mood of the book or that reference an aspect of the book was really fun.
Kudos for who, was that a Blackstone suggestion or was that?
It was. Oh, it was. They reached out to me and they've been doing this for other authors. So Blackstone is just great. They're just great. And I was like, a playlist? What? And within minutes, I was like, oh, I would put this on there and I would put this on and I would put it in this order. And so at first I just put on all the songs I thought would be on it. And then I put it in order. And then it was painful because then I had to make cuts that, you know, I didn't want to overemphasize certain things. And then I wanted to keep it to 25. They said I could get longer than that, but I was like, 25 is a good playlist. And so I had to do some trimming, some songs on the floor that I would have loved to still be in there. But yeah, it was a ton of fun.
Well, we could always have the director's cut, right?
So you can, right. Right.
For those of us who are looking for that, you can share that at another time or put it on the website. These are the ones that wound up on the cutting room floor just because of time, because the Academy said, you know, we couldn't do that. Right. And I think James Wade did something for one of his books. I think he did a playlist as well, but I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think he may have done that. So the cover of this book, it's a beautiful cover. I mean, when you see this for the first time, were there other nominations for cover? Or was this just the first one they said, here, what do you think?
The lesson is like this too, right? So the lesson, I got it in ARC form and it was a beautiful cover already, but nothing prepares you for the finished lesson cover either. Or this cover is the same graphic designer, Catherine English. She is amazing. And, you know, she sent me like a couple ideas for the lesson. It was like a 3 or 4 cover concepts. And I went with that one. There was another one that was real close with the lesson too. But we went with this because it had, the text was really like bright and it pops off the cover. And then with this one, she sent me like 28 different concepts. And I still was not prepared for when, like, pictures don't even do it justice.
When you see it in person, it's on my desk at work. And, you know, sometimes the sun shines through my window and there's a certain point of the day where the sun is shining right on the book and it is just shining. And people will come in and say, oh my gosh, look at the cover of that book. And I'm, oh yes, well, let me tell you about Cadwell Turnbull. And now everyone has to hear me evangelizing.
Right. It also has, like, if you remove the jacket, the cover itself, the hardcover is really gorgeous. There's like a snake that catches the light, and it, depending on how it catches the light, it's like rainbow colors. And I'm like eternally grateful to her for all of the work that she's put into these covers. They're like, I don't know what mind brings this, you know, into the world.
I can't even imagine what the second cover is going to look like, because I'm sure she's already thinking about whatever the second cover is. So you're well into the second book and you're teaching, you're writing, which brings me to my next question, which is probably ludicrous. And you could say, Carol Ann, you're crazy. But anything you have read recently that you would like to share with listeners?
Oh, I mean, yes, yes. It is true that I haven't been able to read as much as I would like. Yeah. You know, I've been reading a lot, but again, it's been student work. And what's really exciting about the MFA is that the students are brilliant. You know, and some of these novels, I just can't wait to be out in the world. No one will even see for a while. I'll talk about books that exist in the world right now. I really like A Memory Called Empire and A Desolation Called Peace. They're Arcady Martin's duology. I think both of them won Hugos. They're award-winning. They're incredibly brilliant. I just recently found out through Twitter that she has ADHD, and I have ADHD, so it felt like a... I just love her book, yep. You know? And so I really love Never Have I Ever by Isabel Yap. It's a collection of short fiction. I was lucky enough to blurb for the book. That's Out of Small Beer. She's a friend of mine. She's writing. They're not all Filipino horror stories, but there's a lot of that. And then there's also a lot of like being a part of the immigrant experience coming to the US, you know, culture clashing and that sort of thing. Her collection is really great. Been reading Naomi Novik, some of her earlier stuff. So we just read Uprooted. I read that with my wife, and we've been reading Spinning Silver.
Oh my gosh, they're so great.
They're so great. I've been reading Martha Wells. So I started with the Murderbot books, and then my wife was reading the Rex Shura books, and then she put me onto it. So I've been reading those as well. They're both series. Murderbot is a series of novellas, and then she recently came out with a novel. Those are great.
The Murderbot. She just does wonderful things there. And I will post all of the links for all of these books that you're recommending, including the link to your website, which I think the playlist might be up there yet. I'm not 100% sure. And I can't thank you enough for being here. I really can.
Thank you so much. Can I say one more? It's going to kill me if I can't say.
Yes, please.
So I just recently read The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. And I just love her. I love her because she's a fantastic writer, but she's also, someone had referenced when they read The Lesson that it was a good comparison to think about to read Station 11, that it was doing something similar. And I had not read Station 11 at that point. I read Station 11 in November. So like a few months before the pandemic, you know, weird time. But it was incredibly brilliant. And also like a very similar project, like a lot of really interesting POV work around events, you know, which I'm really interested in. You know, she's incredible. So those two books, The Glass Hotel and Station 11, are wonderful.
And she's got a new book coming out next year that I think
she does
with some time. I don't want to say time travel, but she takes some liberties with time. So I can't wait to read that. I hope you will be back for the second book. I don't know that I can wait.
I don't know that I can wait that long.
So while you're writing, just keep in mind, you got a playlist you have to do for the second book.
Right. I'll move some of the ones that got cut to that as well, because it's going to be relevant for sure.
You're going to be humming along thinking, oh yeah, that's going to be this section. It is a wonderful playlist. Listeners, today's book, No Gods, No Monsters, by today's guest, Cadwell Turnbull, is available everywhere. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore. No Gods, No Monsters is published, if we haven't said it enough, by Blackstone Publishing. And I am a fan of Lauren Maturo, who does all wonderful things at Blackstone. So thank you, Lauren, for making The Lesson
available. She's incredible.
She's incredible. The Lesson available to me back then, and No Gods, No Monsters as well. I am grateful. Cadwell, thank you for joining me today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf. I hope you will be back for book two.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
This is amazing. I am always so thrilled to see you. Listeners, I'm always so thrilled that you're here. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you find most podcasts for the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library. Check out our website at merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Library Director Dan Chusmere and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.